This edition of The Stack was first broadcast on the 13th of December 2014 on Monocle 24.
Food, glorious food, tasteful treats from Germany, fine dining guidance from France. The culture of eating far beyond the dinner table gets a stylish redesign, a pre-Christmas gorge on some delectable print morsels. Today on The Stack. We have a platter of tempting publications to get through as we survey some of the freshest food magazines around, plus a look through shelves with one of London's most talented magazine creatives. Plus we head across the Baltic to small but beautiful Latvia, where a superb new magazine hopes to add some design refinement to Riga.
People here are cautious when it comes to new things. There are still very few companies ready to pay for good quality design. But we have some really great designers and illustrators, though.
All that and plenty more besides for your delectation today on The Stack, Monocle's dedicated print industry review and analysis programme. Hello and welcome to The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. Now, I'm delighted to be joined today by the editor and creative director of the Gourmand magazine. Since launching in 2012, the stunningly designed title has pleased and bemused magazine lovers in London and beyond. Gourmand has now become every aspiring coffee table's must-have appendage. The new issue sees something of a redesign. I have to say, copies were selling, to go with the culinary theme, like hotcakes at the Mag Culture stand of Monocle's Christmas market just this past week. With a pristine copy of The Gourmand in hand, it's welcome back to The Stack to David Lane. Dave, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Good to see you again. Let's talk a little bit, because, you know, a sort of a redesign, the tweaks, the little bits of magic that you work is always intriguing. Tell your sort of regular readers what exactly they've got in store in this fifth instalment.
Well, it's not so much of a redesign. I mean, we always, because doing a magazine is quite self-indulgent, we always take far too long enjoying designing it, and essentially every single feature in it ends up being its own thing. And this is kind of a continuation of that, really. We work with Monotype to redesign one of the typefaces in the issue. So we took the existing typeface that we used and we went down to the archive and we looked at all the drawings of it that ever existed and sort of made tweaks and amendments. And I made suggestions on how it worked for our publication. And we've sort of come out with something really exciting. I mean, this program isn't about typefaces. I'm not going to kind of bore people.
Oh no, we like to talk typefaces.
Great.
You mark my words.
Rarely am I surrounded by people that like to
talk
about
typefaces.
Well,
no, what I always find interesting about this is, though, once you start, like you said, you're in the archive, you're starting to tweak. How do you stop? Because it is one of those things where you could pretty much be there for all eternity.
Totally.
Making these tiny adjustments.
I mean, having done five issues prior to this one, I had a fairly good understanding and the guys I worked with of what worked and what didn't. So there were some specifics that we changed. I mean, the font we used to use is called Monotype Grotesque, and it's sort of less a typeface and more really a collection of all the bits that didn't fit into anything else. So there's lots of lovely quirks and characteristics in it that we kept and accentuated. There's also bits that are just kind of outright wrong about it, which I like, but also coming at it now from an editorial perspective and a practical perspective, they're things that it's nice to like wrong things when it's your job, but actually, we sort of ironed those out.
It's when those irritating practicalities raise their head
exactly.
That you have to sometimes shift sights somewhat. And what about the sort of overall? So there's, you know, small changes like that. Nothing sort of too drastic. How do you feel the sort of the evolution of Gourmand is taking? Like, what's the pace of it? Is it still something that happens in a fairly sort of gentle way? Is it quite, to use one of those sort of watchwords, a sort of fairly organic process? Or do you feel that you and your team have to, you know, very pointedly sort of address specific things? How does the sort of process work?
I think we have to tell ourselves it's fairly organic and relaxed. Obviously, the reality of putting together magazines is completely contrary to that. And two a year for the team that we have, the size of the team that we have, is an awful lot of work. And we plan it really well, but not to the extent that we try and limit the outcomes. So we have to plan it incredibly well. We use lots of different paper. We have a sort of quite specific print specification that some things look good on this paper, some things look good on that paper. We work with lots of brilliant writers. There's like so many different parts of the puzzle that need to be taken into account, and we want to make sure everything in it's best represented, which I think we do really well. I mean, you know, there's like an incredible piece in this that an artist in New York called Ernst Fischer produced, and he's basically been developing an incredible micro camera for years and sort of trawling all these incredibly nerdy blogs and buying 1 millimeter long things lathed by Japanese men in cellars to put this camera together. And it's not a world that's creative, you know, and he's managed to sort of hack this equipment to make something creative and take absolutely incredible shots of caviar, individual caviars, which are
and
here.
I mean, I try and describe these. It's not easy. They sort of look like pictures that would come back from the Hubble Space Telescope. Do you
They're
know
incredible.
I mean?
It's amazing. Whenever you go in close enough to something or far enough away from something, it kind of looks the same. It's
that's,
like that.
It's quite profound.
It's like the Charles and Raheem's film. You yeah. know, you kind of go out a million miles or you go in a million miles, and there's sort of similarities. But you couldn't not print these images on the best quality paper and put the glossiest varnish possible on it.
Yeah.
It would just be kind of insulting to the fact that he's gone to all of the work to do it.
And other good news for me, because I remember, I can't remember which issue where we had a sort of cat food.
There was,
Was your cat in it? I can't remember.
Yeah, so, Peter, my cat was in it.
And sure enough, there's hot dogs this time around.
Which
I really like.
It's just in there at the end, you know, to answer any criticism that it's kind of in danger of being a little bit uptight. You know, it's nice to have something like this. We really like dogs and cats, and I think we wanted to do something that wasn't kind of two internet-y lols that still, you know, we work with Julian, he's a fashion editor, a fantastic man, and we work with an amazing photographer, Jess, and I did all the art direction. Marina cast these incredible dogs, and we work with Peter O'Brien, who's kind of the leading amazing food stylist. So it's bringing together a team of like really the best people to tackle a subject that's normally just sort of done on Instagram. The fabrics are next season's Paul Smith prints. Aggie and Sam made the outfits. So it's quite a kind
of... It's a dream
tour
team. You're describing a dream team. I think it comes together absolutely beautifully. The proof of the pudding is very much there for the eating, to torture. I don't know what I'm saying. I don't know what I'm saying. But people can pick up Gorman. It's been out for about a week. Some other changes as well you mentioned on the digital side as well. This is all sort of evolving and changing.
Definitely. I mean, we've been thinking for such a long time about how to bring the kind of editorial style and content online. And we just redesigned the website. We're really happy with it, really excited about it. And it's going to offer brilliant online content that only exists online. So you arrive at the website and you're kind of confronted with a choice, which is on paper or on screen. If you go on paper, there's just beautiful photographs of the magazine and you can buy it and see what's in it. If you go on screen, there's just online content. So there's lots of films that we're producing. There's photography essays and written features. And we sort of work really, really hard with a brilliant web developer to get the kind of subtleties and attention to detail of the editorial design into the website. So they're lovely things like if you're scrolling through a written piece, as you hit certain keywords, images change. There's like footnotes and all of the kind of things that
often... It's all magic. I don't know how they do these things, but it's very clever, isn't it?
It is very clever. And it never ends, which is difficult when you're used to... At least with print stuff, you press go and it's done.
There's a beginning, middle and end, exactly.
So that's great. I mean, on there now is a few pieces from this issue. We're going to put two or three pieces from each issue online in a kind of extended form. But moving forwards, once or twice a week, there's going to be a piece of content. We're not kind of going down the road of like, let's find something to do every day. Mm. That's not really what we do. But everything on there is going to be made for us.
Fantastic. That's David Lane of The Gourmand telling us about the new issue and some of the exciting things happening in Gourmand Towers. And we'll be talking more about some other foodie titles in our stack of magazines. David's got a host of others that he's going to talk to us about. And we'll also be going to Riga, amongst other places. Also to come on The Stack this week. Stay tuned.
Christmas is fast coming upon us. Now's the time to wrap up warm in the wind, snuggle up on the couch, or jet off to new destinations. Our entire range of products and collaborations come from makers that are proud to show their provenance. From ESK knitwear and Anderson jackets, to Porter weekend bags and luxury Beg & Co home blankets. The Monocle Shop has everything you need to find the perfect gift this Christmas. Available in-store and online at monocle.com/shop.
Now, indeed, to Picture Postcard Riga, where two young editors have taken a brave leap into the world of magazine publishing. Their creation is named after an imaginary character, Benji Newman, who's the embodiment of all that is new and exciting in this small, former Soviet state. The cover features Benji's own stubble, made into a rather lovely graphic design. The contents seem to take readers on a quiet stroll through the back streets and courtyards of Riga and forays into the Latvian countryside. Personalities are featured that, in their own subtle way, illustrate a strong sense of connection to space and provenance. Editor-in-chief Agnes Kiner and art director Madara Krivina explain the Benji Newman story.
Benji Newman is a man and he's around 38 years old. He's English-speaking, but his grandfather comes from Latvia. So at the moment he's picking up Latvian as well, but he prefers writing so that his accent isn't heard. Most of the time he's on the road, searching for his perfect day. And on the way he meets different people from different backgrounds, different professions, ages, etc. And so he hears out their stories, and that's what we get, the outcome. Those stories are curated in a nice edition, which is called Benji Newman.
We decided not to put photography on the cover of the first issue because everybody does that. And we wanted for Benji to stand out. So I did a research on patterns, and it turns out that people are drawn to patterns because they calm down and distract from everyday life mess somehow. So we went with that. And the cover is done by me, and it's Benji's beard.
We choose to leave both languages, Latvian and English, in the edition, so we have a bilingual bookazine. At the beginning, we were wondering, should we do both languages, or maybe let's do only English because it would be easier and the space would be saved, etc. But then I talked about this subject with a few foreigners, not Latvians. One was a British guy, another was Danish, and so I offered them. So you get like two magazines. One is only in English, and the other is in English and Latvian. Which one would you prefer, and what do you think that you get like this language you don't understand? And so they both agreed that although you kind of get like a waste of space, kind of, you know, but you also get that real feeling that there is this other language present, and as there are so many English editions in the world, and there will be more to come. And then you get this, I guess this is the only bilingual Latvian English edition in the world. It's just more interesting and more real, I'd say.
Graphic design and visual identity of the country is in its early stages here in Latvia. Because of the wars and being under the Soviet Union, we don't have that previous generation of graphic designers from which to take things over. And young people are now studying in Netherlands and United Kingdom and Denmark. I think that Latvian visual identity in the near future will be all of those countries mixed together. People here are cautious when it comes to new things. There are still very few companies ready to pay for good quality design. But we have some really great designers and illustrators though. We think that how you display your magazine is as important as how it's done. So already at the beginning we decided to skip kiosks and go straight to concept stores where Benji would be well displayed. We also sell at cafes and barbershops. Basically, we go where our audience might go.
So there are around 14 stories in the first issue.
One I would like to tell you more is about this man called Jazeps or Joseph. He's 86 years old and he's a former beekeeper and also a teacher. And so he's actually living in a social home now, kind of small city in Latvia. He's Latvian. But anyways, the stories he told me, it's all about women, actually. He's talking about sex he's having still with his girlfriends who are in their 70s or something. The greatest thing here is that, you know, you always think what will happen with you when you will be old like this guy or other guy. And then you see that this guy is really happy, actually, and that he is leading his life as he wants it to be. And it somehow gives you hope.
That was the editor-in-chief and art director of the new Latvian title, Benji Newman. And we've got a copy of it here in studio, replete with its beard cover. I'm informed, Dave, that you can actually go online and you can shave the beard using your mouse.
Will you
be doing that? Now, you just browse through this. I mean, it's quite arresting. I think it looks really, really nice. What were your thoughts? It looks really good.
They've done an amazing job. It feels very personal and lovely. And my only thought aesthetically was, I think the guys at Apartamento magazine, who I know, set up a brilliant thing and made their own stance. And they did something that was different to a lot of other publishing. And lots of people have been inspired by that. I kind of wish people would be a little braver and move a little further away from it, because, you know, it's flattering to reference things, but it looks like in here there's content that's good enough to look how it should look on its own and not just look like something else.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Well, it's interesting, actually, and we often talk about this idea of, you know, paying tribute to something or borrowing from it or being inspired by it, and it's an interesting middle ground. And I do like to ask people who, so particularly if they've got titles that are well known in a certain sector, so where it's a sort of foodie kind of sector, there's food and culture crossover that you're sort of operating within, and it's interesting to look at some of the other sort of, I don't know, you couldn't really call it competition, but other titles that maybe look at similar areas. So we've got a couple of food magazines which we can look at now, a new German magazine. This is the first one. It's a winter 2014-15 salon, which I don't know. I rather like the some of the cover imagery on this. It sort of looks like a oil painting or something almost, which I find quite striking. I can't obviously understand any of it, which is a problem. But it's intriguing to me that, you know, there's a sort of food title. That's your first glance. What do you sort of make of that? Anything jump out at you straight away?
I think I might have said this before, but every single person in the world eats and is interested in food, because you have to be. And there isn't any other subject that's the case for. And magazines about breathing would be really boring. So, you know.
There's a challenge for somebody.
Exactly. Considering that's the case, there's still like relatively few magazines about food, really. And this sort of space for people to have their own takes on it is huge. I mean, the salon looks much more commercial. You know, it looks like it's very well put together. There's lots of interesting things in it. My German's not brilliant. But it looks like there's lots of great stuff in here.
And there's some more, I guess there's some more kind of traditional food photography, you know, big full bleed, rich colour images, traditional stuff.
At the moment, you know, there's lots of magazines that fall into this category of, especially in England on the newsstand, there's kind of lots of very lowest common denominator cheap food magazines. Or there's stuff at the other end of the spectrum. This looks like it's kind of fit somewhere in between, which is quite nice.
Yeah, that's a happy stamping ground to
operate. Definitely.
We've also got Fooding, the French title. This is sort of limited edition. This has got some good fun stuff in here. And I like one page that I opened, which is like super chefs. And it's got little portraits of them, but they've been doctored. So they're wearing kind of crazy chef's hats and masks, which I think is quite striking. So you've got, you know, Yotam Ottolenghi, like some kind of the reconciliator. That's it. That's his super powered chef name. I don't know what you call it. And again, this is doing something, again, a little different, but doing it very well.
Again, it's sort of that nice middle ground. It looks really good. I mean, there's so many great magazines. Like, I buy lots of food magazines for lots of different reasons, and some are more chefy and some are more sort of avant-garde, and some are like very practical, and they're all great.
Where are you on the sort of, when it, you mentioned sort of avant-garde, if it really is pushing the envelope, where it's a food magazine, because maybe that's what it says on the cover, but there's no other discernible way of knowing it. Are you sort of happy to welcome them into the magazine community, or do you think it's, in a way, it's more of a challenge to keep a little bit of discipline?
I think I have to be happy to welcome them in, because this is often the criticism of the magazine that I publish. But every single thing in it is informed by and dictated by eating and drinking. I think people are just very, very used to this kind of traditional way of covering food and drink. And actually, you find that everyone that's interesting in whatever field, creative or not, they're the people that are interested in food. You'll kind of be hard-pressed to find an incredible artist that doesn't care about what they eat.
Absolutely.
But, I mean, I can't think of a specific example, but if you were to pick up a magazine that sold itself as a food magazine and it cost £15 and actually there wasn't anything in it, you might be a little bit disappointed.
Might be a little shortchanged. Let's talk, Dave, as well about some of the other magazines, because you've got a wealth of intriguing-looking material here. And we'll maybe go from the sort of sublime to ridiculous when it comes to sort of size-wise magazines. Remind us, I'm not sure, we wonder whether we might have mentioned this before, but sort of super, well, small format in some ways, really interesting. Tell us about, describe these to us, if you will.
So this is a publication called... I have to apologise, really, because I often kind of cop out when I bring magazines in here and go into the archive and get like a 1960s copy of Avant-Garde.
We like to see that.
Picasso etchings.
We love to hear these.
And avoid bitching about contemporary magazines. I've brought in some contemporary magazines. It's called Picpus. It's quarterly. It's edited by Charles Asprey and Simon Grant, and it's an A2 poster who are art collectors, or one of them is at least. It's an A2 poster that folds down. It's just really beautifully put together. Each one's a different topic. It's free. It's great writing. It's interesting imagery. It's a lovely format. I just think it's a nice thing.
There's something sort of unendingly charming about an effective concertina when it comes to, you know, making something that is, as you said, this beautiful large format, and then it sort of folds down into, well, quite literally, you know, pocket size, which is presumably the point of the exercise.
I've got kind of 2 years worth of them here. They fold down to like a really small A6. One of them's got Adolf Hitler playing cricket, painted by Frank Walter. The other one has Lily Cole from Pop Magazine, shot by Tyrone Nibon, and one's got a David Shrigley that just says, "Do not show this to anyone."
Brilliant.
So there's quite a scope.
They're lovely little things. Let's shift our sights to the other end of the size spectrum. And you've got a couple of, you mentioned sort of David Shrigley and a couple of these sort of interesting artists. Maurizio Cattelan, you know, one of the arch exponents of the surreal, of the bizarre. And this is a really interesting project of his, of course.
Yeah, so I wanted to bring this in because obviously the magazine that Maurizio Cattelan does now, Toilet Paper, is fantastic and is sort of endlessly referenced in every music video and shoot that you look at. And he's really kind of developed this incredible aesthetic, which sits in like a long line of other people. And he did Kenzine, and it's very of the moment. You know, you couldn't pick up kind of any magazine without there being something of a hint to it. But this was a publication that he did called Charlie. The one that I've got is from, one of them's from 2000. This one's from earlier.
We like a bit of archive delving. That's what we like to see.
But this is really nice because it's as surreal as everything he does now, but just not quite as polished. It's more of a scrapbook. So on the cover is a big saucepan of beans with a man's head in it looking out.
Of course.
And it all just seems to just be bits ripped out of other magazines, put on the floor and photographed with no words.
And I think there's something, what is nice about that is there's no question there's something more charming about that than the digital equivalent of, you know, some gathered things, isn't there? It's never going to have the same quality of sort of the fact that you feel like you're getting a bit of a window into how someone thinks and what their creative process is.
Definitely. This is like what Tumblr should be.
There you go.
Basically.
Lots of good lessons for people here today. And just briefly, you've got this sort of checkpoint Charlie, as it were, which is a sort of mega-sized, and this was for, is it the...
It was for Berlin Art Fair in 2000, published on the event of the 4th Berlin Biennial for Contemporary Art in the year 2000.
And this is a weighty sort of phone book-sized
It's huge,
effort.
And I think every single issue of Charlie was a completely different format. Again, this one is all existing things put in order, and I think every single person involved in the Arts Festival contributed in some way, and it's just sort of all photocopied and put together. But again, it's kind of like a brilliantly curated, amazing Tumblr of things. And it's not like Kenzine or toilet paper, and it's completely the opposite. It's just photocopied and torn and ripped, and there's no makeup or retouching or...
And yes, it has, it, without question, a thing of monochrome beauty in its own
Does. It's really nice. I mean, both of these, you know, we looked at the Latvia magazine, which looks amazing, and there are lots and lots of other magazines starting now, and I think these two Charlie magazines are a good example that it's not too hard to make something that feels like its own thing.
Yeah.
With its own idea.
It's easier than you think to be unique. It is. Is the takeaway. Dave, it's great to speak with you as always. Thanks so much for coming to see us on The Stack. Final thought, what happens next? I know you probably don't even want to think about it with this Gorman just, you know, sort of hot off the presses. Any kind of early thoughts or plans for next year? What should we be looking out for?
We're going to do a series of events in January that are linked to this issue, which will sort of bring some of the content to life from talks and maybe dog shows.
I like where that's going.
There's an amazing piece in here on Liberace that we worked on with the Liberace Foundation and a brilliant journalist in LA. And there may be some Liberace-themed evenings.
Great.
With sausage tables. Says, I read one quote out from the Liberace.
Please do, yeah.
Liberace possesses a favourite sausage routine, garlanding one corner of the sumptuous quilted blue leather bar with a spacious sausage table. Guests are then assailed with great platters of salami, bologna, tongue sausage, sausage loaf, bratwurst, liverwurst, other things, and head cheese.
I cannot think of a better note on which to end than that. David Lane from The Gourmand, thanks very much for coming to join us here on The Stack.
Thank you very much.
And that does bring us indeed to the end of this edition 120 of The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. A special thanks to our guest today, David Lane, our producer, David Pleasant, and our studio manager, Claire Urban. Any comments, queries, criticisms, drop us a note as ever at info@monocle.com. And don't forget to tune in and join us again next Saturday at the very same time. Catch up from monocle.com or via iTunes or SoundCloud. But for today, for this edition of The Stack and me, Tom Edwards, it's goodbye.